Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. This week, we're talking about episode 101, the pilot episode of Rick and Morty. Here's Aaron with the recap.
In this pilot episode, we meet Rick Sanchez, a brilliant mad scientist and inventor, and his grandson Morty, who is equal parts lab assistant, whipping boy, and moral brake on Rick's runaway crazy train. Morty's parents, Jerry and Beth, are concerned that Rick's extracurricular activities are hurting Morty's scholastic performance. They learn that Morty has missed nearly an entire semester of school due to constantly being taken from his classes to aid Rick on his latest high-concept sci-fi rigmarole. Jerry plots to ship Rick off to a nursing home to protect Morty from his dangerous influence. Meanwhile, Rick uses Morty to smuggle mega seeds from Dimension 35C through interdimensional customs way up his butthole. However, the authorities soon discover Morty being used as a mule and attempt to apprehend him. They narrowly escape justice, only for Rick to find Beth and Jerry packing him off to his new home. The mega seeds have since dissolved in Morty's rectal passage, temporarily granting him super intelligence. Rick uses this opportunity to convince Beth and Jerry that assisting on Rick's experiments is actually good for Morty's education. The ruse works, leading Rick to gloat that there is now nothing to stop Rick and Morty's adventures continuing for 100 years. All right, Jim, what'd you think of this pilot episode?
So I've seen it twice now, once years ago, again one day ago, and I have different opinions on it because first time I watched it, I was sort of off-put by a lot of the choices they made. Maybe most specifically the belching, the drooling, what a disgusting human being Rick Sanchez seems to be. And yet there's something that's really compelling about the story in general. I find the character relationships fascinating because they're not super conventional or they're not this very glossy portrayal. It seems like they're a little more honest, a little deeper than a lot of characters I see on screen. And that's kind of the biggest thing that drew me to it. That and just how funny it is.
I completely agree. I think that this is a great introduction to the characters. I've seen all of Rick and Morty's, I don't know how many times. I kind of got obsessed with the show. I missed the first season, but it was one of those things, you know, that a lot of Bald Move fans had been like, hey, you guys should check out Rick and Morty. It's right up your alley. Check out Rick and Morty. I remember right in the middle of season two, some friends of ours house sat for us, and we had this big whiteboard in our living room where we planned projects and stuff, and one of our friends had drawn a whole bunch of like Rick and Morty characters in different situations, and me and Cecily got home, we're like, the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. And then we realized it was this Rick and Morty, so we started watching it, and like I said, I kind of got a little bit obsessed with that. And
was it Justin Roiland house sitting for you?
No.
Okay, just making sure.
Just a fan of his, and gotcha. That led me to like, because I was familiar with Justin Roiland from some of his voice work he'd done in cartoons. Like me and my son really liked watching Adventure Time, and he's infamously the Earl of Lemongrab. From that show, and I'd recognized his name, and I'd heard of Dan Harmon, but I started, like, this kind of led me down a Dan Harmon hole, where I then watched all of Community, and then I found out he did a documentary, and I watched that, which led me to his podcast, which, like, you know, is like a recursive hole, because a lot of stuff in the podcast works its way into Harmontown and Community, and it's an interesting cycle. So I'm kind of ate up with this show, and the creators, and I just, you know, it's such a brilliant concept. The fact that this came from, you know, Justin Roiland kind of doing a spoof of Back to the Future, and just these two distinctive voices, and they're just the way, the cadence of it, the fact that, you know, there's just all this repetition of names and like repetition of concepts, and it's like almost comedy torture, mm-hmm. but it's just fun. It's fun and funny to listen to, and they capture that dynamic and essentially the way I mean, I'm guessing that, like, you know, Justin brings that, and then Dan Harmon kind of like finds a way to pound all that into some kind of plot and character development arc.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, these characters are very iconic, and you get a good handle for, and it's pretty amazing that you get a good handle for this dynamic and how kind of fucked up it is from the very beginning. Lesser shows would try to sugarcoat Rick and Morty's relationship and like maybe reveal as you go on just how kind of like predatory and opportunistic that relationship is, but but, you know, it kind of goes in a different direction where, like, Rick is this amoral person, but there is some kind of heart that you find out in some kind of bedrock that you drill through eventually.
And when it shines through, it's almost like he's making concessions because he knows people won't tolerate him if he doesn't.
Right.
And I'm hoping that, you know, that develops into some genuine compassion, genuine empathy for people.
But even then, this show, it's like, you know, philosophically, it's like, you know, one of the problems of altruism is, like, if you do altruism and it makes you feel good, is it altruistic? So, like, yeah. Rick making concessions to the social contract and the fact that he has to do bare minimum things to keep his family's support, you know, is he a good person? Is he trying to is that a means to an end? Is that all, like, yeah. it's
this is the stuff that I love about Rick Sanchez, or right. at least, because I would hate to be around someone like that in real life, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But sort of analyzing Rick Sanchez as a character is really fun.
You mentioned about the relationships that are kind of sketched out, and I think it would be helpful for us to kind of go through those individually to kind of talk about, you know, where we're starting off from. Let's start with Rick and Morty.
Yeah, I mean, the relationship is developed right off the bat in this cold open. You get to see that, okay, Morty is somewhat just along for the ride here, mm-hmm. in a lot of instances, but Rick, in this discussion where he's talking about, I made the bomb and I'm going to bring Jessica along for you. The fact that Rick has to point out that he has no intention of stealing Morty's girlfriend is so fundamentally fucked up because, like, Morty isn't thinking that at all.
Right.
Morty doesn't even, like, Morty here doesn't even want this to happen because he seems like he doesn't want to do this to Jessica. He doesn't want humanity to end.
Well, plus, like, Jessica doesn't even know him. Like, he's self-aware enough to know that, like, this is a crush that I have, and she doesn't even know I exist. So how weird is it going to be for her to be my Eve?
Yeah, ethically, it's entirely fucked.
Yeah.
Like, and forcing her into that situation.
And Rick saying, don't worry, I'm not going to do it, implies that he's actually thought of the possibility.
Yes, and that's the most disturbing part, is that, you know, Rick's tendency probably would be to do that.
Yeah.
And him pointing it out unveils it.
Yeah, and they're rocking a tightrope here because, like, you know, having an alcoholic family member, which obviously Rick is, can be a very scary thing. And, you know, like, having a grandfather, a father come home drunken and like in a rage and like this impulsive, and like it can be frightening. But in this instance, they up the stakes so much that, like, it's absurdist because it's not like he's physically threatening Morty. He's actually going to set off a neutron bomb that destroys the whole world.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's such an absurd concept. And Morty fights against it, you know, that he's able to overcome his grandpa. But then there's also, you know, like they strike this kind of bittersweet tone in almost all their comedy where, like, Morty is able to prevail, but it's like basically he's wrests the wheel away from his grandpa. He parks the spaceship. Grandpa passes out, but the bomb is armed. And how is Morty going to disarm it?
Yeah.
And they don't bother to answer that question. It's just, you know, you come back from the credits and the world's still here. So,
yeah. And I think it's important to note that this is a pilot. So, you know, any kind of, like, continuity that they might develop in the future is sort of non-existent here, right?
And I will say that, like, I do think that as Rick and Morty goes along, it becomes more very much like the X-Files model, where have, like, these myth arc episodes that kind of hold, like, a couple episodes that kind of tie everything together, but they're also, you know, sprinkled with just strong episodic content that's, like, you know, doesn't really have major continuity. And, you know, just so you know, if this is the first time you're going through Rick and Morty, these kind of, like, discussions up front are going to be spoiler-free. There'll be a section that we identify that has spoilers in it later, but you can, you know, we're not going to spoil future episodes just yet.
And so they book in the whole episode with sort of moments like that, where I look at what Rick is doing and it's profoundly fucked up. Like, the exploitation of Morty here is shocking.
Yeah.
He tries to throw Morty under the bus when they come back and his parents are pissed that he hasn't been in school. And he's like, oh, Morty, I can't believe you haven't been to school. Nobody's buying it. Mm-hmm. And then Morty turns around and tries to defend him, and that's maybe the saddest part. Mm-hmm. He's, like, trying to defend his grandpa, who has just thrown him or attempted to throw him under the bus.
Right.
And then the final part of the episode, where he's screaming 100 years Rick and Morty, is he's laying it all out, right? Morty is his prisoner at this point. He has convinced his parents that there is nothing wrong with this relationship, and now Morty has 100 years of Rick and Morty to look forward to.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe the most fucked up part about this whole ending to me is when Morty's spelling it, or when Rick is spelling it out, he's essentially saying that Rick Sanchez is going to do amazing, great things and have fantastic adventures.
Right.
And you're going to get to be present for those things.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not by your choice, because now I have you as a captive.
Yeah.
You're just going to witness me doing great things. That's so fucked up.
Yeah. It's a lot like kind of Ozymandias at the end of Watchmen when he has his assistants. He's like, I regret that you can have such a meager reward. And he kills them all because, hey, you know, that's life.
It's so fucked.
And like, there's so many things. Like, the fact that he, like, breaks Morty's legs. But they're in the Stockholm type of situation because, like, you know, when he falls off the cliff, tumbles down, breaks his legs, and Rick's not necessarily bothered by that, but Morty goes on his tirade about, like, I've had it with you, I'm done, you're sick, you're a monster. And Rick's like, okay, well, I guess I gotta do the bare minimum. And he finds a serum that fixes his broken legs, but then that just sets up the fact that, like, I've used up all my portal energy, you know, man-whoring it up with these incredibly youthful and virile inhabitants of this perfect planet. And
while you were writhing in pain on this other planet, other dimension.
But just as Morty, because Morty's like, oh, wow, you fixed my I feel like a new man. Now he's going to, like, you know, bait and switch him. It's like, okay, yeah, now I've done something good for you, and you felt bad about judging me. Now I need you to do this thing with the mega seeds. And also, you never get, like, whether, like, I don't buy that Rick can't, I don't think that Rick's ever have smuggled a mega seed up his ass. I think it's more of like he just doesn't want to do it, and he convinces he doesn't really force Morty to do anything. He just emotionally blackmails and manipulates him into doing it.
Right.
But there's also like a strong anti-authority streak that they paint in Rick, that, like, you know, school is dumb, and he like lays out this ludicrous thing. It's like, it's just a bunch of people, 2 + 2 shouting 4, and then you get a slip that says you can take a crap or whatever. But then when we actually see Mr. Goldenfold's math class, it's literally exactly like that. He's just leading the children in like 5 + 5 = 10 and a stupid quiz. And it's funny that, like, in this particular universe, like, Rick's kind of jaded worldview is a lot of times immediately validated.
Yes. And that's the thing where you can never quite turn fully against Rick, because he does make a lot of salient points on a lot of different issues.
Yeah, the universe is bullshit in a lot of ways that will be explored over the next seasons of Rick and Morty. And that's the thing, is like, if you boil everything down, like, you know, at least from my perspective as a secular humanist, that there isn't like a cosmic gatekeeper, anyone keeping any kind of moral score. So like, if you boil everything down, like, Rick's kind of amoral nihilism is quote unquote technically correct, or even absolutely correct. But it's just, he misses the idea that, like, you know, since there are no rules and there are no purposes, it's life is what we make it. And he chooses to make life miserable for everyone at the maximization of his own success and gratification.
Yeah.
And, you know, that doesn't necessarily pay off in the long term. Let's put it that way. I also love the, like, they try to do a couple things where, you know, like what I said in the beginning about, you know, lesser show would try to, like, make Grandpa Rick a little bit more cuddly, and they kind of start to do that with Rick, you know, kind of leaning in to Morty being afraid of this new planet and being like, you know, facing these new and different situations and facing our fears is how we grow. It's like, that's a stock, like, ABC, TGIF, Full House, you know, Danny Tanner kind of speech to his daughters, but it's interrupted by him running screaming from some hideous spider monster, so that you know, like he's trying to do the sitcom thing, obviously for less than altruistic reasons, but he doesn't even have the control as a parental figure, as a male authority figure, to guarantee his safety in those things. And it kind of, like, instantly subverts it, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, and there are moments too where, you know, the softer side of Rick is used for manipulation, to exploit other people or opportunities, like when they're at the meal, the breakfast. The morning after they go on their space trip, he compliments Beth's eggs, right?
Yeah.
And he's not doing that because he genuinely thinks the eggs are good, I don't think. He's doing it because he's driving a wedge between Jerry and Beth.
Well, and it's so, like, the way it's performed by Roiland, it's so nakedly insincere.
Yeah.
Like, he's, oh, Beth, you really cooked the crap out of those eggs. And then he adds, like the
wish your mother were wish your mother,
which
them,
we don't know exactly what's going on with their mother. But, you know, there's this hint that, you know, Rick's been out of their life and now he's come back in. And, like, Beth, you know, craves that approval and, you know, miss, like, I don't know whether his mom, her mom is dead or out of the picture or other ways, but, like, you can tell that Rick knows exactly what he's doing. He knows exactly what levers to pull. And probably feels like, you know, if Beth was as smart as she should be as my daughter, she should see through all this. Or I'm actually teaching her the lessons that's going to let her become, like, her fuller potential, which he probably sees himself as that. So, like, he doesn't even, like, I don't even think he sees it as doing something wrong. Like, if she's not self-aware enough to know that she's being played, then she's an idiot, and idiots don't matter. He has no respect for them, right?
Yeah,
they're not even human or people. As he kind of like as Morty's
the bureaucrats.
Mowing.
Oh yeah, my god, that's so good.
Yeah, yeah, they're like it's just his worldview. And if she is smart and resilient enough to like call him on his bullshit, then well, he taught her a valuable lesson, and now she's stronger and more fit. So
yeah.
He's got this worldview that just can't be falsified. They also, before we move on, because this would be a good segue to talk about Rick and Beth, they said this on the commentary of this episode that they intended this scene of Morty daydreaming about Jessica in math class to be indicative of some kind of learning disability. Like, maybe it's dyslexia, maybe it's attention deficit disorder, maybe he's just, like, you know, has some other kind of unspecified learning disability. And they definitely support that in the dialogue, because Beth, Rick, Jerry, they all, you know, well, da doy, son, of course there's something going on. And it's not, we know it's also not all Rick's fault, because Beth says, in kind of defending Rick, hey, Morty struggles with school long predate Rick coming back in her life. But I felt like that kind of go for broke surreal visual of the knock him around scene, it didn't actually land when I was just watching organically, because I, you know, as being like a 13-14-year-old boy at some point in history myself, you know, Morty in this case is sleep deprived, he's fallen asleep in class, he's daydreaming about a pretty girl. Those are all things I think you can do without having a learning disability in those situations.
Absolutely.
But yeah. It does seem that, like, and I don't know what, like, you know, Morty's quote-unquote damage is. It'll be interesting to see, like, the tracking that as we kind of watch this series. But they definitely want to imply that to make – to serve a couple purposes, I guess, to make Morty more relatable, you know, that he's, like, you, just to set him apart from Rick. Like, you know, Rick is a super genius. Rick's daughter is at least a horse surgeon, which we'll talk about here in a minute. But Morty is not from that. Like, he's not the apple that's fallen. He may be the apple that's fallen far from the tree.
Yeah, he rolled down a hill.
Yeah, things are going to be a struggle.
Up in a pond.
Things are going and floated down the stream.
Yeah, as the fish ate him.
Yeah, out to the ocean where he got swallowed by a whale and shit out. He's not. You know, they have those lines where, like, Jerry and Morty are kind of, like, in their lane, and, like, Beth and Rick are in their lane. And then we have Summer, which really is just loosely sketched in this episode.
Oh, yeah. She's barely in it.
Yeah. And she's kind of like, you know, we'll see what camp that she falls in.
I really want to talk about Beth and Jerry, because there's a lot going on there.
Can we talk about how that as that relates to Beth's role as a horse surgeon? Because I wonder how much, like, in the writer's room, they sweated that, like, what is the exact profession that we can give her where it's obviously something that takes a lot of talent to achieve. Like a heart surgeon, you know, everyone reveres heart surgeons, brain surgeons, like any of these specialist type surgeons. Like, they're like the, you know, they're brilliant and they're good with their hands, and they usually have kind of like a cockeyed view of morality because they have to deal with death so much, and they're like personally hold the life and death in their hands. But then they make it a horse surgeon. So, like, you know, it's automatically, whether this is fair or not, and I apologize to veterinarians, it does seem like people see, like, oh, you're a heart surgeon, and then you say, oh, I'm a horse heart surgeon. It's like, oh,
Well, it's lower stakes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, people love their horses. People love their pets. They become friends, but they're not human beings. And I feel like there's inherent stakes when you're dealing with medical issues of human beings. They're not there as a veterinarian of any kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, it does diminish that just a slight bit.
Right. But not because of any skill or intellect. It's almost like it's just a purely social construct. But you also wonder, like, why isn't she a heart surgeon? You know, did she try to be a heart surgeon? Did she, like, you know, did her relationship with Jerry get in the way?
I mean, it seems pretty clear to me that Jerry is... He's at the very least taking every opportunity to rib her about this.
And she's very brittle about it, too.
Yes.
Which, I don't know if brittle, like, if your husband is demeaning your profession, then, like, I don't know
what
strong
that,
and resilient would look like in the face of that. But,
right. How about justifiably brittle?
Yeah. But maybe also there's also an underlying insecurity that she knows that maybe this horse surgeon in some way that she can't articulate is seen as less than by society, and that bothers her. Mm-hmm. But also, like, what's Jerry's deal? Because he's this giant kind of, like, you get the idea that he's this, like, this pushover. But I don't know, because is he a pushover just in general? Or is he a pushover in relation to, like, the extremely strong character of Rick?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because, like, you get the feeling that everybody would be steamrolled if you are the thing that's in the way of Rick and what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Which, in this case, is running roughshod over his family for his own purposes. I think that they kind of hint that Jerry's kind of the different side of the same insecure coin. And they also have a lot of mutual, like, hidden resentment that, like, this isn't – you get the idea that this isn't the life that Beth thought she would have, and that Jerry's perfectly happy to have this life, except for he knows that Beth isn't happy, and there is some resentment, and that kind of harshes his buzz.
Yeah, and then you throw Rick in the mix, who's constantly being the wedge between them.
And probably subverting his role as a parent, subverting his role as a husband.
Yeah.
Being the one that, you know, like, it's not Beth or Jerry wearing any of the pants in the house. It's Rick. Mm-hmm. I had the question as I was watching this episode, how it's like, the first question is, how does Rick in a nursing home even work? But then the underlying answer is, like, why does Rick want to live with his family?
So that he can have, whenever he wants it, a rectal seed purse.
But I feel like with his portal gun, he could have that anytime anyway. Like,
that's
fair. I wonder I think this is a big hint to his character, right? Because he could live anywhere. He could live in a fortress in space. He could live, on the other side of the universe and still have access to Morty whenever he wants it. What is the value to have his base of operations being his family home?
Yeah, and it's a fair question.
It's something I think that, you know, will be revealed as the series plays out.
So I just want to talk about, like, maybe some of the dimensions that we do see in this episode, because there's what I'm going to call the originating dimension, which is where we're introduced to Rick and Morty. And then there's obviously dimension, is it 35C with the mega seeds?
Yeah, the mega seeds dimension.
Yeah, which has, you know, this interdimensional portal hub in it. And then there's this future broken leg, everybody youthful dimension. So we kind of see three different dimensions sort of hinted at or shown.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Human music. I like it.
And now for a segment we like to call Plot to the Future, where we tune our portal guns to dimension BM77, which allows us to glimpse behind-the-scenes details, examine the trivia, and view potential spoilers for future episodes. So if Dimension BM77 sounds frightful and scary, perhaps turn off the podcast now. There's a ton of stuff to talk about in this particular episode that I found out. I was really entertained by the commentary. And if you haven't heard, if you've not heard the commentary, it's available on the DVD versions of Rick and Morty. And I will put links to the, if you want to purchase those on Amazon.
Also Blu-ray if you're living in 2019. Maybe.
What did I say? Did I say DVD?
DVD. What is this? 1999?
I don't know. I went a little bit too far back to the future. I went all the way back to 1985, 95. When the hell did DVDs come out?
Sounds right.
But one of the things I thought was amazing and is kind of like, how did they do this? Because I've done some writing projects before, but Dan was talking that him and Justin wrote this script in between Community seasons 3 and 4, which, you know, there was a little bump on the way to season 4 of Community. But they were trying to break this thing down, and, you know, it was getting late, and Dan was going to take off. And Justin, he said, you know, has worked with me over the course of years, said, look, if you leave now, this is going to take like 6 months to finish. But if you stay, we can get it done this night. And they wrote this script in 6 hours.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty incredible.
It's sort of inspiring and demoralizing at the same time. Because like, as somebody who has tried to write things, like both of us have, it takes a lot longer than 6 hours. But I mean, that's just a testament to, you know, how much work they've put in over the years.
But not just that, because like Dan talks a lot about how he feels that writing is so difficult, because he's like, you know, I keep thinking that it's just an experience thing, that like there's a right way to do this. And as soon as I figure out that formula, then it'll just be easy.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a testament to, like, sometimes you get those, like, just live wire creative experiences where you get, like, you know, you're with a partner that you got a lot of chemistry with and the ideas are flowing and it just is like, God, why can't it always be this easy? Mm-hmm. The delay between season two and season three was in particular because they felt like they couldn't live up to the standards of season two. And it was extraordinarily difficult breaking all those plots. But I thought it was pretty interesting insight, as long with one of the few notes they got from the network, was that, like, Morty seems like he's more of a punching bag. And they added things like this cold open to show that, like, Morty actually has agency, that with sufficient motivation and cause, he can literally wrest the wheel from Rick and turn things into a different direction. And I'm like, Jesus, how bleak was this before they started inserting that? Because Morty's a punching bag for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But he does have, they gave him just a little bit of calcium in that spine, just enough to where you get the idea that, like, if Rick was going to do something really crazy or really dangerous, that Morty might put his foot down.
And it does, Morty does assert himself, you know, multiple times throughout the series. I think he starts to eventually teach Rick some lessons, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I'm glad that's part of the show, actually.
There's also, like, a lot of people had a complaint about this show, and I, in fact, shared this complaint early on, was the incessant, like, burping and belching,
mm-hmm.
And Rick's, like, drooling and, like, foaming at the mouth and, like, is, like, very off-putting and distracting. Like, I some of the verbal tics I could roll with, because I don't know if you've noticed already that I tend to stutter and stammer a lot, and, like, those kind of, you know, get starting off and get the wrong word, but you just autocorrect yourself. Like, I guess that didn't bother me as much because I feel like I've got a lot of those same foibles, but, like, the burping and belching, they mm-hmm. talk about in the commentary that, like, Dan hated that too,
mm-hmm.
and that, but I got the idea that it's almost like, like, almost like a comedy gatekeeper with Roiland. Like, hey, this is what I do, and this is kind of like on the roller coaster. You got to be this tall to ride. Like, if this burping and belching is going to put you off, then, like, I just want to get you out of the way, because by the time the dick trees show up, by the time the stuff really goes off the rails, I've already weeded out the people that are not going to be along for it. But if you can get caught up in everything else that's good about it, then, you know, you'll be ready to roll with the stuff when it gets truly demented and insane.
And I think some of the unease with the burping and stuff actually makes it into the show. Like, they're waiting in the interdimensional customs line, mm-hmm. and there's this what's clearly a Ferengi
right
in front of them. And when Rick is talking to Morty, he belches very loudly, and the Ferengi kind of side-eyes him.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's, like, reflective of Dan's feelings on the whole thing and brought out through the animation, or if that's just something the animators got. They went, oh, my God, this guy is burping disgusting. Of course these people will be looking at him.
Well, and also to have, like, that particular alien, the Ferengi, who's kind of an uncouth, you know, backward species to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we might enslave our women, and we have the worst form of pure naked exploitative capitalism in the world, but we don't fucking belch in our dimensional customs lines. Like, I thought that was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to talk about is that, like, as we alluded to in our main discussion review, is that the portal technology, I feel like there's it feels like, and I think they even will say this in a later commentary, that they realize that they kind of goofed up. Because one of the long-running plots that propel the action forward is that everyone wants Rick's portal gun technology, because navigating dimensions is like a Rick thing, that no one else in the universe can do it. And here we've got interdimensional customs, which implies that this is like as common as air travel. And the mm-hmm. other thing that they didn't intend to insert, but they did, is the concept of time travel.
Yeah,
because when he visits the hyper advanced planet, he talks about it being like far in the future, or it's a future timeline.
And at the very least, there's time dilation.
Yeah. Because, like, he spent a year, and you know, obviously that gets really weird if Rick, you know, goes off screen and he comes back and he could experience 5 years. Like, that mm-hmm. is, like, you know, there's a lot of narrative trickery that I don't think they intended to happen that could go on, and they wanted to kind of. You know, we've discussed this in other podcasts that, like, sometimes having limitations on your technology is very important creatively in story writing, because otherwise you know, it's Deus Ex Machina anytime you want it, because, oh, you can just go back in time and rewrite history, or you can, and there's already a lot of that that eventually goes on. Mm-hmm. You know, like, before we get too much further into season, they're going to completely destroy this Earth and jump ship to another dimension. So right. we got some news to talk about this week. San Diego Comic-Con was just last week. I'm not sure if we'll have a new segment for every particular podcast, but there's a lot of stuff to talk about here. The banner announcement is that Rick and Morty are going to return November of 2019, this year. We don't have the exact details for its televised premiere, but Cartoon Network has announced that they're going to have an exclusive airing at their Adult Swim Festival that's happening in Los Angeles. This is the second year for the event. It runs from Friday, November 15th to Saturday, November 16th. And they said that the Rick and Morty episode is going to drop that Saturday, I think in the evening part of the mm-hmm. show. And in addition to that, like, sounds like a fun party to go to. The festival includes events described by Adult Swim as a one-of-a-kind 360-degree fan experience. They have attractions such as Robot Chicken's Intergalactic Power Summit, Squidbilly's 10-man Bunkhouse Stampede. They have exclusive talent appearance, bands from, you know, that are kind of related to the Cartoon Network brand. Mm-hmm. It looks like a fun time. Also, as we mentioned, San Diego Comic-Con came out, and they have... They didn't talk a lot about season four, except for, well, all the things we're about to talk about. they confirmed guest stars like Taika Waititi, which mm-hmm. is most famous as the director of Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And also the...
Eagle versus Shark.
Yeah.
Eagle and Shark.
Not
I don't
familiar
know,
with that one.
Yeah, it's that Jemaine Clement. Movie from years ago. That's the first thing I had seen of his.
Well, they also did collaborate on that What We Do in the Shadows,
yeah, right,
horror comedy project too. I don't know that he's involved in FX series. He's probably an executive producer at least, but yeah. Also he will be joined by Sam Neill, and mm-hmm. apparently those because the interviewer, this is for a lot of this information is from an Entertainment Weekly interview, which I'll also link in the show notes. The interviewer asked if Sam was going to be like in connection to a Jurassic Park role or Event Horizon yeah. role. And they're like, no, we just wanted like a little Kiwi flavor for these particular alien race. So he'll be working with, he'll be the same species as Taika. Mm-hmm. Confirmed guest star, Bald Move favorite, Paul Giamatti.
Man, we have such a complicated relationship.
We sure do.
With Paul Giamatti. I love Paul Giamatti.
We love Paul Giamatti.
Like, this is the big news.
Like
for
Rick Sanchez, our love is shown sometimes comes out in demented, weird ways. But
absolutely.
But we do love the gentleman. And they also talked about the structure. This Roiland was quoted as saying, "Without giving anything away, we've serialized stuff. We check in now and then. That's sprinkled over the top of strong episodic characters." Says you're going to want to watch them in order for that reason, and definitely get a rewatch of all of season three before season four.
I mean, this just sounds like what Rick and Morty has become.
The leaning into it.
Yeah.
Like, like maybe we're going to flirt with having a little bit more continuity, a little bit more X-Files, which I'm excited for because mm-hmm. I like the episodic stuff. I like the fact that they can be zany and crazy and do interdimensional cable shit. But I also want to find out about what Evil Morty's up to.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting. They also released a few production stills. One features like Rick walking through what looks like some kind of alien field of wheat with his like hands, like kind of like Russell Crowe from Gladiator. Mm-hmm. Another one is Rick being kind of held up by a couple of armed anthropomorphic crocodiles.
Yeah, sort of reminded me of like the Lawnmower Dog episode.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I the connection I drew, especially since Roiland's insisting that we watch season three, is that there was Crocubot from the Vindicators 3. He was half unfeeling cyborg, half unfeeling crocodile.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
And I wonder if like this is like the race of crocodiles, intelligent crocodiles that's seeking vengeance for Rick slaying their greatest hero or something.
Yeah, could be.
Some stealth continuity. But that looked like a lot of fun. There's also a 50-second clip that came from the episode that stars Sam Neill and Taika Waititi, where Taika is an alien app developer with the words "Do not develop my app" tattooed on his forehead. Mm-hmm. And the setup is apparently Jerry has seen fit to develop his app, and it's going to bring dire results, including summoning an ominous sounding mothership to Earth. So that'll be a lot of fun. And the clip
is that alien like a physical representation of an app? Is that what we're supposed to believe of this?
No, because he had a cell phone. He had a cell phone device with
that was running
apps,
his
beeping
yeah.
app. Yeah,
I'm super curious about that scene.
Yeah, and it's like we used to be software developers in our former life, and I get a lot. I get a big kick out of stuff that's like Silicon Valley.
Yeah,
and I wonder like how much like if this is. I wonder if this will be like informed by kind of like there'll be like a little bit of almost parody of the success of Silicon Valley, because we know that Harmon's real good friends with Kumail Nanjiani, or if it's just going to be like a layman's idea of what apps will be, because that's what the humor is in this. Like Morty's trying to shut it down by smashing all the monitors, and the guy's like, "That's not how apps work."
But we're smart enough to know about servers.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
do something.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll be funny. Yeah. They also talked about, because one of the big kind of things that's talked about Rick and Morty is their infamous long delays in production. That like the gap between season 2 and 3 was like a year and a half, and the gap between season 3 and 4 is actually longer. In interviews, they said that the gap between 2 and 3 was because they didn't feel like they had a good handle on a process to generate the quality that they were proud of from season 1 and 2. It's like, we got to top ourselves. How do you do that? Like, who do we need? Like from a personnel standpoint, what kind of processes do we need? Like how do you actually get this to work? And I guess they got all that solved in the writer's room. And so what's delayed, season 4 is that there was a lot of contract negotiations between them and the network that ended up yielding not just one new season but 70 episode order.
Yeah,
and they have also said that they're essentially working on season 5 right now. So the idea that it's going to be much less than 2 year delay between this season and next, maybe we even get a season in 2020.
Yeah, which, should be.
You know, in hindsight, would be a smart thing to do. there's also. One of the things that was in this pilot episode is the whole 100 years Rick and Morty, 100 times Rick and Morty, which is interesting because in Community, Dan Harmon kind of called a shot saying, had one of his characters, it was Abed, say that this thing was going to run for 6 seasons in a movie. Mm-hmm. And we got exactly 6 seasons. There's always been kind of a rumor that there might be a movie kicking around. It's interesting that this happened again, that they put in the very first episode that they got 100 episodes, and the 70 episode order is almost exactly 100 would bring Rick and Morty almost to exactly 100 episodes. But it seemed like Dan and Justin are both open to, like, if this thing turned into something like Simpsons that runs for 20 plus seasons, as long as they're having fun and they got good ideas and it's not a shit show, they'd want to keep doing it.
And in the commentary, it almost seems like Dan was a little disdainful of the idea that they committed to anything at the end of that, at the end of the pilot with 100 years of Rick and Morty, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what exactly their feelings are on it, but they did say, yeah, we could see this going 20 if that's what people want.
It's hard to see because, like, disdainful, because the example he
that's
cited
the impression
is, like,
I came away with.
Yeah, it's like, what if somebody on Twitter is like, you owed me 100 episodes and you didn't give it to me, I'm going to kill myself. Like, kind of like an over-the-top, like, and that's the thing. Like, I imagine it's easy to get disdainful of any rabid fan.
Sure.
Because, like, Jesus, I'm creating the show and I'm not as attached to it as you. Like, there is something kind of weird to that, but I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we can try it. We want to have 10,000 podcasts.
10,000 Jim and Aaron.
10,000 Jim and Aaron, 10,000. And they're all going to be monetized and they're all going to have strong club support there. See, this is going to be cool in 20 years when,
oh, hell yeah,
when we're broke after 4,000 episodes and I've died of a heart attack because I haven't taken care of myself. So they also talked that the other thing that they talked about is the whole Szechuan sauce thing.
Oh,
I don't
boy.
Know that we ever talked about that. What did you think about how that all went down?
I am not familiar enough with this. I knew there was a Rick and Morty thing. I knew that, essentially, McDonald's brought it back for a while, and that just stirred up the shit again.
The season three premiere, like, they had a reprise of the 100 years Rick and Morty because he said, I want, like, my whole goal is to bring Szechuan sauce back. I don't care if it takes 7 more seasons or whatever. McDonald's, you know, saw that and decided to bring it back on a limited time basis, and they grossly underestimated how many people wanted the damn Szechuan sauce, and it caused a lot of these, like, the aforementioned obsessive fans to get pissed that they couldn't get their Szechuan sauce, which is, I wonder how that feel. Like, it sounds like that they have complicated feelings, because it's like, it's kind of a, he said, he described it as a weird bit of a bummer for everybody. Because, yeah, I mean, McDonald's tried to do something fun. They underestimated demand. They ended up disappointing everybody. But it's also a very Rick and Morty thing that they artificially engineered this insane desire for this old product. A corporation tried to, like, good-naturedly, like, ha-ha, here's a thing, and then that crazy artificial demand just crushed them and caused people to... That's the unfortunate
part. They should just run a sweepstakes. Lifetime of Szechuan sauce for whoever wins it. You do, like, the Monopoly game at McDonald's. And then who's to complain, right? Well, I didn't win it. I didn't win the fucking lottery yesterday either.
Or, like, I don't know. I mean, Mulan's coming out later this year. There's still, like, just do it. Just go
Mulan,
wide with
Szechuan
it.
Yeah. Combo.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it came from in the beginning. So, like, just do it. And also, there'll be a stealth, like, Rick and Morty tie-in, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, if they ever do it again and they don't have enough sauce, just let's try not to scream at the minimum wage earning McDonald's employees. You know,
I didn't get an NES Classic the first time they came through, so
yeah,
and I wasn't screaming about
it. Did you scream in the face of some 17-year-old Toys R Us employee and
not
have
about
that video shared on YouTube?
Not about that.
That's how weird things got with the Szechuan stuff. But anyway, yeah, I was actually kind of surprised that more, like, bigger news didn't come out of San Diego Comic-Con, but, you know, why spoil things?
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Mineron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at baldmove. See you next time.
Did you get those seeds all the way up your butt?